You caught that. Yeah. Connie and I had worked on that for a little bit this week. She's the one that does all the work. I just sent her the link to the clip. I said, I kind of want this phased in here. And she did it perfect. We were having problems, though, with when he stands up, because you get a little rumpity-rump going there. So she had to go in there and tweak it a little bit. She did an absolutely fabulous job. So, Connie, I think she's listening. Thank you very much for doing that. Welcome to the show, everybody. Hi, it is another Sunday afternoon here on the Crossing the Crescent Discussion Group. We are here every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. And on Tuesdays, we are here. Here is the Kufar Phobia and Mr. Van Halen in the house, too. Welcome, guys. Go ahead. And okay, no, hold on a second. I'm surprised this man is awake, to be honest with you, because he was on StreamYard for, go ahead, was it 5 hours, 37 minutes, and 68 seconds? You did just wake up? No kidding. Yeah, I'm shocked. Yeah,
I spent 5 hours backstage listening to Ken. And only interacted.
That is, okay.
Time, dude.
Yeah, that's.
I was determined. I had plenty of beer.
Rad can all be a witness to what purgatory just might be like. Because I could about imagine. And we're going to be talking about that, too. Ed, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Roll Tide, everybody.
Okay. All right. You had to get that in here. All right. That's fine. That's cool. That's, you know, that's like some people trying to sell their books on my show by holding them up for everybody to look at. Say, hey, buy my book. And we know that Chris Claus. Chris, you got a debate tonight. You want to tell everybody about that?
Yeah, I'll do it. On Discord. I'll go ahead and I'll put the Discord into the chat through my phone here in a minute on YouTube. I will be debating a younger gentleman. His name is Holly Shake. We'll be debating, is the Torah and the Injil, was the Torah and the Injil corrupted at the time of Muhammad?
At the time of Muhammad. That's the key. That's the key right there, is at the time of the Muhammad. Because, you know, what's really funny about that? Well, it's not too funny, but what's actually really we have the exact copies of what existed at the time of Muhammad today, which is
exactly.
You know, how do you overcome? You'll find out, and you'll do a job of embarrassment. What is this? What is all these messages you're sending me here, Rad? I can't keep up with all this.
And, also now my live stream later on this evening as well. So I'm not doing the debate live. It's probably going to be recorded and uploaded to my channel within a few days. I have a brother in Christ that's going to record the debate for me. But I am going live tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I will be destroying that fake wannabe gangster, Jake the Fake Muslim Metaphysician. Will be exposing his ignorance when it comes to Islam. And just as a preview of what you will get tonight, Jake the Fake Muslim Metaphysician affirms that the Quran is not eternal.
Hmm. Okay. All right. That's it. He's an apostate. I mean, and I have it right here. So if you look and see what the true meaning of apostasy. Hold on. Anybody? Hold on. Wait a minute. I got it. 597. Okay. It is to deny any verse of the Quran or anything which by scholarly consensus belongs to it is considered apostasy. You want to read that to them? It's on page 597, just in case, Chris.
So
you want to?
The dude's in which the light, he believes that the Quran is not eternal.
Yes, sir.
And, wow.
I don't want to go too far into that right now because that was part of the live stream tonight. But I will be using Jake's words. And I'm not going to be superimposing that view upon him. So it will be in his own words as well.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So be looking for those links over on Chris's channel. Dominic from England. Look how cold it is in England. It's so cold in England and miserable over there. You got to wear a scarf in your own house for crying out loud. How are you, sir? Good to see you here. You always got a good smile on your face. We like having you here. Anything that you want to promote today? I mean, since we're going through the line here.
There were some Bible manuscripts that I was trying to find in Oxford. I was trying to access them because there's a whole load of papyri in one of the museums in Oxford, and I was trying to see if I could actually get to them. So it is like because there's some in the Chester Beatty Library, and then there's some in the British Museum. Is there any manuscripts near where you are about if you actually looked to find?
Well, so the United States didn't go throughout the world stealing archaeological things and then bringing it, put in one. So we don't have that kind of stuff here. Oh, that's true. That's true. I did. I bought that. I bought that little piece of part. No, it wasn't actually the guy. And here's how cheap I am. This guy, we're in Babylon, and he's not a kid. He's probably a teenager. And he walks up to us, and this is before they started blowing us up anyway, and he shows me this little piece of shard of pottery, and it has relief on it, meaning that, and you can clearly see it's absolutely ancient. So I tell him, I said, I'll give you $2. And he says, $5. And I'm like, no way. And I kind of walk away. I turn and I look. I said, $3. He goes, no, five, four. He goes, no, five. I'm like, all right, $5 it is. So I got it sitting in my cabinet here. So it's something. It's quite the find. But I paid for that, though. But
when I went to Egypt, I think that I was doing that. So I was going to one shop and then going to another shop, like the same shops, and just can't see them all. Also, like when you're kind of when you're bartering, I was like,
well, what are they selling these shops? What are they selling?
Stuff like perfume and other stuff. So they are trying to kind of get them back, because normally when you talk to bartering like places like Egypt, you kind of talk to reduce the price by a quarter, then just like see if you can barter them down from there.
Sure, yeah, and that's you know. Here in the West, we think of going into a shop and bartering people, trying to, you know, negotiate a price is kind of like impolite. That's what they, I mean, that's just the way they roll in those countries.
I've seen videos where dudes are like, you know, sure, I'll buy it for this price, you know, and he goes, no, I can give a better deal. Here, I'll give you, you know, a quarter off. Well, no,
Anyway, okay, so today we're going to be discussing the sociopathy of the Suna. Now, what do I mean by that? I know. Sociopath, it's one of these DSM, what do they call it? What is it? Manual of Psychiatric Disorders. It's
DSM,
there we go. Okay, so somebody that has one of these disorders printed in that was the one that answered that question. Thank you, Issa. There you go. Okay, four. Are they operating four or five now? I think they're on five. All right. So, okay, anyway. So here's what that says about a sociopath. Wait a second. I'm still sharing. Here we go. Okay, so sociopath. Sociopathy is a pattern of antisocial behaviors and attitudes, including manipulation, deceit, aggression, and of lack of empathy for others. So why do I bring that up? Well, if you follow the Sunnah of Muhammad, you can directly correlate to all of those definitions right there. And you could conclude a lot of the behaviors that you would be following according to the Sunnah would be categorized or could be classified as being sociopathic. And the reason why I bring up the Sunnah is because on that page I was just listing there, it says in the Quran, in Surah 33, Ayat 21, it says, "Ye have indeed in the Messenger of Allah a beautiful pattern of conduct for anyone who will hope is in Allah and the final day and who engages much in the praise of Allah." So it's essentially saying that if you follow this pattern of conduct of Muhammad, you can, have hope in Allah and the final day, meaning that you're going to go to heaven. Well, so what we're going to do today is we are going to take a look at some of those behaviors that if you did follow, that would get you into heaven, according to the Quran anyway. So what I want to do is I want to start off with, does anybody have anything that they want to?
Yes, I do.
All right, George, go ahead.
Is Allah. It's probably something that we've touched on before, but Allah is not a real person, and Allah is not God of the Bible. So I don't know that would be that fundamental question. Maybe we won't address that today, but we must bear in mind, seeing this is Allah a real person? I am suggesting Allah is not real. Allah is a make-believe friend of the Prophet Muhammad. And he was invented to express the sociopathic beliefs of Muhammad and his friends.
So you're saying that all of these beliefs and patterns of conduct are projected onto Allah by Muhammad? Okay. Well, that makes perfectly good sense. And, you know, a lot of people might get a little uncomfortable saying, well, there's no such thing as Allah. Well, if, you know, it's the Arabic term for Allah is God, and there's no such thing as God, they would reject that because I think all of us here unanimously would admit that there is a God, but it's just not the God that is described in the Quran. The God that is described in the Quran is actually the antithesis of of the God that we find as described in the Holy Bible. It's quite the opposite. So what I wanted to do today is I wanted to take a look at some of these practices that are supposedly supposed to get you. How was that worded again? Let me come back over here so I don't mess this up. It is so those whose hope is in Allah in the final day. So what type of practices would that be? What did Muhammad teach his followers to do or not to do that would enable you, I don't know, righteous or justified before God? That we always talk about justification in the Christian faith, so I thought that'd be kind of important to throw that in there. So let's take a look at some of the Sunnah of Muhammad and some of the things that he approved. Now, David Wood did a really good, he's actually made two really good videos the last couple of days. He doesn't have any idea why hasn't been making many videos lately. Any idea?
Yeah, it's mainly because
Are they? Okay. I know that one of them, can't remember which one it was, but one of them, the live support got shut off one night or something, and he lost a lot of oxygen. Is that, or do you know? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
did you ever invite him to the show?
What?
Did you invite Mr. Wood to the show?
I did not. I should someday, just to see if he would show up.
I think it'd be interesting. You got Mr. Shamoon here, so.
Yeah. Well, I have connections. They know Sam. Sam doesn't. I don't know. I could get. I don't know. If I asked Sam, I think if I did ask Sam to come, he would probably come. And I think if I did beg, plead, and maybe send him a check, well, I wouldn't have to send him a check. I wouldn't say that about David, but if I could. I know, and there's a couple other people that have said that they would come. Al Fadi has said that he would come to the show sometimes. It was scheduling at first, and then now there's just all kinds of other things going on with him with health issues. We've had Hatun on the show before. We've had Dan Gibson on the show before. So we've had some of these guys that are really popular out there. And oh, my gosh. That would be like having Einstein on the show. Yeah. And you talk – Dominic, you talk about – yeah, go ahead. We got Chris. I mean, what – all right. Let's go ahead and end the show. Connie, I thought you were at like a party or something this afternoon.
I just got finished talking, so I'm just talking to you.
Well, why don't you tell everybody? Why don't you bring everybody from the party to the party? Say, hey, come on in. Have a listen to what these.
Working on his PhD too,
so. And everybody's busy, and I get that. So you know, if you don't have a life like me, then you can come here every Sunday afternoon and do that. And yes, Anthony, we've had Anthony Rogers on before, Darcy. Thank you for bringing that up. Anthony was on. As a matter of fact, when we had Anthony Rogers on, we were broadcasting straight to Facebook, and we had 30,000 people view that show that day. It was just absolutely phenomenal. Okay, let's get to it today. Okay, so the Sunnah. My argument for the Sunnah is that if you – and the reason why it's sociopathic to practice the Sunnah is because if you do practice the Sunnah today, the pattern of conduct of all time for the perfect man, you just might get to go to jail. And here's why I say that. Because some people we know have found themselves in gone to jail for this very reason right here. Oh my goodness, wife beating. And we've talked about this before several times, of course. When you look in Quran chapter 34, it says that you're supposed, if you fear rebellion in your wife. And here's why, because you financially support them after all. And since you support them, then they are to be to you. And if they are not, then you admonish them right there. Admonish. Say, shame on you for not being obedient to me. And then if that doesn't work, then you don't sleep with them. And then if that doesn't work, then what do? You beat them. Now, this is the God of the universe supposedly telling people to do this. One half of the universe, or one half of the human population, to do this to the other half of the human population.
Well, Eric, sorry to interrupt you, but I have two questions for you.
Yes.
Question number one: are you saying that a Muslim man has to be defending himself against the woman? Are you saying he just simply has to fear?
Right. Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And two, so that's one problem. The next thing is, you are saying that these men, they own these women so they can do it?
I haven't seen any provisions for women to smack men around. I think that we all know the answer to that is pretty obvious. Men are normally stronger than women, normally, on average they are, and they're able to rule physically over somebody else, force themselves physically over somebody else. So therefore there isn't a provision for women to beat the man.
Not beating them lightly?
Well, if they, well, women do tend, right, well, I was just going to say they do practice oral hygiene probably a little bit better than the men do, and so they would be a little more versed and apt to use such a utensil on men, but I don't think so. But I'm going to get, I'm actually getting to the part where that you were addressing here, where it's, where this is codified by the Sharia. This is codified by Islamic law. This is codified. Let me make sure everybody's understood. This understands this. This is codified by God-given law, not man-made law. This is God-given law. God, this law here is derived from what God has told mankind to do. So if we look at the excerpt from Reliance of the Travel, page 540, it says, when a husband notices signs of rebelliousness in his wife, when he notices just signs, it doesn't mean that she has to be rebellious, but just signs of rebelliousness. And that includes, well, I don't know, it does say here, where she answers him coldly when she used to do so politely, and he asked her to come to what?
Hey. No.
Why?
Don't say signs of rebellion, because it doesn't imply that. It's on the man if he fears rebellion. Okay, you're always, my brother, you're always wanting to give a little bit of crumbs to these Muslim men. There's no signs that says nothing of signs of rebellion. It's on the man if he fears rebellion.
Okay, I didn't have this up on the screen. I
so
okay.
Right?
Well, this is what the Reliance of the Traveler. I'm not doing this, Connie. This is what Reliance of the Traveler doing this. So I apologize.
This isn't the Quran. See, that's when. See, once you get into the Reliance of the Traveler, you get into what men are saying. Well, you get into what men are saying in the Quran too. But we're talking about the Quran.
Well, this is supposed to be. Point. Well, this is supposed to be law derived from the Quran and other official
man
reading.
Man.
Okay. Well, I agree 100%. But it says right here, when a husband notices signs of rebellion
and
in his wife.
That's where they're trying. That's where the Sharia is trying to take it off of the man and put it on the woman.
Okay. I agree. I agree. It's just, but it says here where, and as well as when she, it says right here, when she used to answer him. Okay, whether in words, when she answers him coldly, when she used to do politely. So that is where a man would, let's go back up here, notices signs of rebellion. Yes, that uppity woman not being polite to him. Or even better yet, this right here, when she to do so politely, refuses contrary or habit. Let's see here. Well, doesn't it say when to come to bed also? Or ask her to come to bed and she refuses. This is where you were talking about if you're a woman and your man, the man wants to have sex with you, it doesn't matter if you're in the parking lot at Walmart. I mean, you have to, I mean, it's time. You have to do it. You have to comply. That's stretching it. And I know, okay, so let me just scratch that, because I know just as soon as this thing gets out there, somebody's going to pick it up and say, look what this capper said about what women have to do. Okay, I was being facetious. Just saying.
Well,
just make sure.
Either way, man, you got to have a strong pimp hand to be Muslim. I'm just saying, strong pimp hand.
What is that?
Strong pimp hand. You got to control your hoes. I'm just saying.
Oh, a pimp hand. Okay, I thought this was like a utensil of some, a pimp hand. Where? Okay. Okay.
And I would say it depends on the Muslim, but if a Muslim takes this literally, it's deeply wrong. Yeah.
Well, this is the type of behavior that can be classified as sociopathic, wouldn't you say? If you're following the Sunnah of Muhammad, the teachings of Muhammad, or I'm sorry, the teachings of God, Allah, this is what you'd be doing.
Okay.
I was worried that would never happen.
That would never happen.
Yeah.
It sounds insane. How could you have a relationship with someone and you hit that, like, go get, come to counseling?
You know what's interesting?
Can I say this real quick? Because I got to go back here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, when they are saying, thank you, Rad, when they are saying that the woman is in rebellion or there's signs of rebellion, that's proving in those writings, that's proving that the Muslim men are in rebellion to Allah in the Quran, because it doesn't say that. So when they're implying, okay, this is what it means, they're proving that they're in rebellion to what Allah says in the Quran. Because it says, if you fear, not if the woman, so it's showing, it keeps on showing that the Muslims are in rebellion to the Quran.
But Dave, what I don't hear you explaining is the idea that what it really means is that we can serve with a toothbrush.
Hold on. Let me finish this and I'll get it. I know where you're going with this. Yeah. Okay. So let's just make sure that we understand exactly what Reliance of the Traveler is teaching us per se. But it eventually says that you're obeying me is religiously obligatory. That's what you tell your wife. You have to obey me because by our religion, by Islam, You're obliged to. This is mandatory. And if she continues the rebelliousness, he keeps from sleeping with her and with her words or whatever, and he may hit her. But notice, you can only do it that you don't injure her, but you can hit her. Now, let's get down here to a little bit further. It is obligatory for a wife to obey her husband as customary in allowing him to have full, notice that word there, full lawful sexual enjoyment of her person.
Well,
so
he is her property. He is her field. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, I don't see nothing wrong with that. Just saying. I mean, if I was Muslim, I wouldn't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Then again, you know, I'm not really associated with that. Except that I really don't have feelings. So, yeah.
You are a sociopath. All right, so. That's on the lines of, isn't that on the lines of failing to, well, that's not covering them face. Doesn't it have something to do with covering your face?
Yeah, that too. They don't want to cover their face no more, so they take an advantage in the kitchen, you know, and they spray it all over or throw it all over their daughters. I mean, wow. Religion of peace, huh? Beautiful.
Yeah, well, it's peaceful, yeah.
Didn't know this young lady myself, but I know someone who knew her. Well, someone whose daughter knew her. So I knew the parent, and the parent's daughter knew this young lady. The young lady lives in an area where she was assimilating to Western values. In other words, she rejected Islamic dress code and codes of behavior. She kept friends with non-Muslims. She didn't dress in an abaya, she dressed in jeans and t-shirts. And one day she left to go to school. She was like a senior in high school. And she didn't turn up to school. It turns out that her father and her brother took her from the bus stop, took her home, and strangled her to death in her bedroom. It's a real story.
Is this the one where they put her in a suitcase? Okay, this is different. Okay, all right.
There's probably many of them, but in this particular case, what the father did was tell the police that he did it. But the police recognized that it wasn't him, it was actually his son, who was actually her own brother, who had strangled her to death. Both of them were arrested, and they were convicted of murder of that
girl. Yeah, that occurs a lot more than... Right, people realize. I mean, I mean, they have that one recording of those two girls. Dad was a taxi cab driver, I think. I think this is in Houston, Texas, also, by the way. But they have the 911 call of these two girls pleading with them that they're dying because their dad is killing them. He's shooting them. And...
she handed them over and she should not have. And she
Really?
And, yeah, but no, I remember that case. Yeah, I remember reading her story. And she actually said, I knew that he was going to kill them, but I handed them over anyway. And I'm like, why did you do that? You know what I mean?
Well, the mother should face some type of, I don't know the final, I'm pretty sure the dad fled the country or something, if I'm not mistaken on that. Yeah.
Well, maybe he got a drone strike up the butt.
Yeah, payback some medevac. Okay, so what is this film, this video clip we're watching here, Rad? Please describe this for me.
So I want to make a distinction, so pull it up and make sure you get it ready to play. So,
ready.
Some of you guys know, I enjoyed 5 hours of Kenny Smoke. You guys all owe me, I'm taking collections, I don't know how I did it, just had plenty of beer, plenty of smokes. So it was a good joke. No, actually, you know what's funny? This is no joke. He actually, I asked my question. Okay. He puts me backstage. He said, I'm going to answer it. And then he reads from a chapter of his book. He reads the whole thing. And about half of it was attacking David Woods. Woods. Okay. Not Wood. Kenny, it's Wood. Not Woods. Okay. Correct that. You're going to have to pay me, Kenny, when I'm done with you critiquing this book. I'm going to be your editor here. But anyway, so it was, he kept saying David Woods. Anyway, dude, literally, I seriously went out, got Burger King, which is about a half a mile down from my house, okay, got Burger King, came home and ate, took Chicago, okay, then went and got beer and smoked, came back, had a smoke, come back, and finally thought time to come up and come on the show for him to put me backstage, you know, after, I made up, dude, I told a joke, I actually commented about him reading the whole book, and he shouldn't do that, because then nobody's going to want to buy his book. And he said, well, let me tell you something, it was backstage, but dude, it was a joke, dude, it's such a skin, man, you know what I mean, no sense of humor. Anyway, so he puts him backstage, so this whole thing, and I'm talking to Eric on Skype, right, so I'm talking to Eric on Skype, and I didn't realize it because I got him on my tablet, all of a sudden he ended the stream after 4 hours, and he pulls me up, and we're backstage, we're having this conversation backstage. But I did not know this. I thought we were still live on YouTube. But it ended the stream. But eventually there was someone in there, I don't know who, and they sent me an anonymous email. Okay? Recorded the conversation. And it was not me who recorded it. But I just said, so there was someone else there. That he had, I don't know who.
I could hear. Look, just, okay. It wasn't me because I could only hear, I was on Skype. I could only hear one side of the conversation. So this wasn't me.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure people know.
Yeah. That's why I thought we were live streaming. So I took off my headset that I have for my computer. I still have my ear. I put my earbuds on. I'm like, I'm here. I put my earbuds in. And then he's hacking the company. He's like, I can hear Eric hearing. But he's still on Skype with me. But I thought he was listening live. But anyway, so just to let you know. Okay, so there is a distinction. I had to set this up. This is where we're going to get stuck from. So just to let you know, there is a distinction, okay, with the wife being, okay? You can't hit the woman in the face. Okay? Because why would you want to? That's leaving evidence, one, duh. Two, well, maybe not. If she wears the burqa, who's going to know? who's going to know? Right? Okay. But anyway, so you can't hit her in the face, and that's very important for this next clip. So go ahead and pull this up.
All right, here we go. All right, here we go. Let me unmute this, and I'm going to mute myself so we can hear it. There we go. No.
Kind of a distinction without a difference, but to his mind, his sociopathic mind, as long as he didn't punch her in the face, he still found the sunnah of the prophet. That's very important to his psychopath. Okay? Seriously. I mean, how can you... No, I didn't beat my wife. You punched her in the head, dude. Yeah, I did, but you didn't beat your wife. What do you call that, dude? You know what I mean? You beat your wife. And now, he might say...
Yeah, I know what you call it. You call it sunnah.
How many times you gotta beat your wife before you're a wife beater? If I sit there and murder someone, am I a murderer if I only murder one person? No, because it only happened one time, evidently, according to your logic. You know what I mean? No, you're still a murderer. Okay? I mean, seriously.
That's his courtroom of logic and reason.
That's what I'm naming the videos. Courtroom of logic and reason.
Yeah, like the Grand Negus. He's like the Grand Negus.
Sit
there and be a judge over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
monic
right there.
Yeah. But you guys heard it. I mean, this is honestly the biology. I'm not a wife beater because I didn't punch my wife in the face, only in the forehead. So therefore, I didn't beat my wife. We got a couple more videos. I just wanted to point that out. I just thought that was interesting. Now, obviously, Kenny doesn't represent all Muslims, but no, I would say honestly, there are a lot of Muslims. He's absolutely right. He didn't punch her in the face, so he did not break some. You know what I mean?
Just the forehead.
Which happens if you get punched in the forehead enough, it causes severe brain damage. But, you know.
Okay, well, I'm looking in the Reliance of the Traveler here, and it says you may hit her. Not in a way that injures her, meaning he may not bruise her, break bones, wound her, or cause blood to flow. So if you punch somebody in the forehead instead of the face, then you're not going to cause blood. So this is consistent with what the law says.
And you have to have a hand of steel not to break someone's forehead. But still, you could cause massive brain damage.
Right, okay.
That's one of the leading causes of pump drunkenness, you know what I mean? That psychopathic crap. You know, well, Kenny's a boxer, so there you go. You know what I mean?
Okay, so...
Have they did any studies in America of Muslim women going to the hospital for head injuries?
Not...
We need to look that up and see what is really going on in America.
That would be racist and bigotry to do such a thing in this woke day and age. Forget about it.
Yeah, I know that's what they're doing. That's a lot of the problems that they're having in Sweden. That's a lot of problems that they're having in a lot of those other European countries where you have mass immigration over there.
They want this stuff in America to be law. You know, no way.
Well, this is what they're. What I mean, this is their culture. I mean, they will not allow the police. Well, I'm just telling you the way that they're recording crimes in Europe, they will not allow the person to be identified by their religion. The religious side, right? They will not be able to. And I'm also thinking that they're not allowed people to be identified by their ethnicity, and therefore you cannot statistically track crime. Or accumulate criminal statistics based on the perpetrator's ethnicity. And the whole thing behind the impetus behind this, I mean, let's just be completely honest about this, the whole impetus behind this stems directly from the European experience with nationalism and with German nationalism and how off the charts German nationalism got towards Jews. And every single country over there is absolutely paranoid of even giving the impression of showing any type of bigotry, not necessarily bigotry, but trying to establish any type of case like the Germans did to show that the Jews were all actually horrible, evil people. And most of the statistics were invented anyway, but to accumulate that type of data and then use that to formulate public opinion. That's the emphasis behind it. But here in the United States, they do keep track of statistics like that. They're just not public. They're not as widely published. But
I'd like to get that list.
Well, they do it by religious affiliation, to be honest with you, because each city. But how are you going to track ideologies? I mean, you have all kinds of different ideologies out there. The point that I'm trying to make is that you're not going to be able to accumulate that type of data, or you probably could accumulate some type of idea based on locale and things of that nature. But for somebody to accumulate and publish those statistics and arrive at some type of conclusion, is you're automatically, I mean, just think about this, you're automatically going to be called every single name under the book, Islamophobe.
And so what? I'm just... The name on the book that you might be an Islamophobe we can do the same thing and show what true Islamophobe is.
Well,
because it's running from that ideology. You know, to not say what it is. And in the meantime, while we're not saying what it is, people are dying, children are dying, especially women and children. You have to identify it so that you could help the people that it's damaging and sometimes killing.
Well,
in order to do that, you would need money, you would need grants, you would need access to various data points, data systems. So it's not such a simple thing to do, but nobody is doing it.
You know, I'll tell you one thing that I did notice when he was talking the other night was anybody that would dare to criticize Muhammad, even during the lifetime of Muhammad, they were being called Islamophobes. I don't know if you caught that part, but anybody that would, you know, dare to, you know, say, well, Muhammad's not a prophet at this, and at that time, well, they're Islamophobes also. So this just is a blanket, you know, category.
And you're absolutely right, you're dead spot on. However, we need to make a distinction, and I think Connie was touching on that a while ago. We need to make a distinction between hating people and criticizing an ideology. So I know in my dialogue with the Muslims that they try to put the two together. Oh, you hate me, you hate Muslims, and I criticize people. I am saying that you can separate people from ideas. You can separate people from ideas. Why? And it's easy. It happens all the time. People become Muslim. People leave Islam. So it's possible for someone to not be associated with the ideology. You can separate people from the ideology. And if I can separate you from your ideology, I can criticize that ideology and still have respect for you as a human being. As someone said, Muslims are just ordinary people, but they've been inculcated with some bad ideas.
Okay, well, let me just say this, that in order to distinguish between one's ideas or an idea or ideology and one's faith, that then would therefore require the people to stop hiding behind their faith and actually have them defend it, going to do that. And the reason why they're not going to do it is because they cannot. When you start exposing what we do every week on this show about what this faith system teaches and allows their people to practice, you can't defend that. So what you have to do is you immediately have to project your hatred, your venom, your violence upon the person that's making the charge against you. This is how you do propaganda. And I'll give them credit for it. They do propaganda fairly well. You know, they all, and here's the funny thing, is they accuse the media, our media, of presenting propaganda against Islam in our country. So they're using propaganda to try. It absolutely is a lie. You're absolutely right. It's a lie. But that's how propaganda is done. Yeah, I agree.
They coddle it. They want to bring a guy out to say, oh no, there's no compulsion in religion. While they're kidnapping girls, you know, to so-called marry them, of course, to ultimately have sex with them. you know. And so, but they'll bring the guys on to say the abrogated verses. There's no compulsion in Islam, and all the nicey-nicey. When in the meantime, for 1,400 years, they're killing us, blowing us up in our mosques, or in our, well, some mosques, yes, but in our Jewish meetings and in our churches, you know. So in the meantime, while they're saying, oh, no, there's no compulsion in religion, Islam is peace, they're blowing us up and killing us, and killing sometimes our little the little children.
That's the sickest part about it, too, is that right,
yeah,
there.
And that's why you have to say it, and that's why I say it, because for one thing, I'm a woman, and I take offense to that, because I was a little girl, okay? And I know good men do not do nasty things to little children. I take that offense because it offends my father, offends my mother, offends me, offends my sister, and me now as a woman, it offends me as a woman. So that's why you have to directly say what Islam is, because they're not saying it. They're in the meantime, some of them are just killing us, trying to take us out.
All right, well, let's move on to the next part of this sociopathic behavior that is set by the example of the Prophet of Islam. And I'm going to go back and I want to make sure that we look at the definition here. Once again, is a pattern of antisocial behaviors and attitudes, including manipulation, deceit, aggression, and lack of empathy for others. So when we look at the beating of women, aggression would be a very good applicable word there. Manipulation, you have to do what I tell you to do. That would be another good one. And the attitudes that are contained there, and thinking that men can, you know, order women around as prescribed in Reliance of the Traveler, where they have to comply with your every sexual whim and desire. That would apply. And then a lack of empathy for others. You know, when you treat women that way and you don't allow women to leave the house, I mean, that was something else that I was going to throw in there, but that would also be perfectly applicable. But now, when we think of child marriages, as Connie alluded to, that'll be the next one we go to. What did Muhammad do when it came to child marriage? Now, Rad, did you have a video clip that you wanted to play that dealt with this at all? Or are you out on one of your cigarette breaks? Going once, going twice, he's on a break. All right, so when we look at child marriages, it's the easiest thing to do is just to go to Quran 65:4, and it speaks about how to divorce a wife. And it says, as for those of women who have despair of menstruation, if you have doubt, their prescribed time shall be 3 months. So if you're going to put away a woman who you've had sexual relations for or with, that is your wife, and you've been with her for at least 3 months, or you have to wait at least 3 months before you can go ahead and divorce her. Then it goes on to say, and those two who have not had their courses, and that would mean, little girls who have not yet menstruated. Paul, hello, Paul. You're going to need to shut up your. There you go. Thank you, sir. Playing it in the background. I get it. So you would have to. In this case, what was I saying? In this case, this applies to little girls who have not menstruated, who are prepubescent, meaning that you have already had sex with a prepubescent girl. Let me say that again. You have married and have had sex with a prepubescent girl. They're still providing a waiting period for those girls. So when a 54-year-old man, according to Hadith, marries a little girl who's 9 years old, and that's what Aisha was. She was a little girl, 9 years old. And this is one of the things that was absolutely amazing in listening to the excuse given by the imam the other night. His excuse was that, number one, she wasn't 9 years old. She was 18 years old. Well, how do we know that? Well, if you read a tafsir according to Bari, you listen to some of the scholars today, and we can play scholar after scholar to tell you to shut your pie hole. That's not true. But the one thing that really stuck with me was is that there was no one was there as a witness. And he kept hammering that home. There's nobody there as a witness to prove that Muhammad did this to a prepubescent little girl. And so what I did was is I sent him a couple hadith and also something from Tabari himself, who he cited, that says that Aisha was 15, 16, 18, however old she was saying, that blows that clear out of the water. Now, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Now, Rad, was, if I'm not mistaken, he was reading this directly from his new book, his new and improved book that it has a bibliography, evidently. And he was trying to tell us that, okay, well, even with all of these other things, you still cannot prove that Muhammad did this because there are no eyewitnesses. Well, that is not true. And I know you're all surprised to find that something that this guy would say is not true, because if you go to sociopathic behaviors, this is what they do. They try to manipulate through obfuscation. So if you go to this hadith right here, let me pull this up here. This hadith here is from Sahih. Notice it begins with Sahih Bukhari, hadith 3898, book 63, hadith 112. And if you use the other type of references in English, it's volume 5, book 58, hadith. Anyway, it says, narrated Hisham's father, Khadijah died 3 years before the prophet, departed for Medina. He stayed there for 2 years, and then he married Aisha when she was a girl of six, and he consummated the marriage when she was 9 years old. But you go down here to this one, Sunan Abu Dawud. It says, the messenger married who? Me. So here you have eyewitness testimony of the person being engaged in this type of activity. Married me when I was 7 years old, the narrator Suleiman said. This is direct testimony from Aisha. He married me when I was 6 years old and had intercourse with me when I was 9 years old. So therefore, you have an eyewitness. There's your eyewitness as to who was present when all of this occurred. So,
yeah, Aisha herself.
Right.
But, you know, Kenny's saying that the scholars were debating about it, like today's scholars. So he's saying, well, they weren't there. Well, he's right. They weren't there, but Aisha was, and we have Aisha's narrated words. See, that's the big difference, Mr. Imam.
Well,
what you're doing here is you're rejecting Islam. You're the Islamophobe because you won't say it.
Oh, I just got back. Did you play that clip?
Okay. No, I don't know which clip to play. Which one do you want me to play?
So no, I just got back to what Sherman kind of said. But yeah, so Kenny's argument in his book is twofold. One, okay, well, first of all, his argument is this: Muhammad did not have sex with Aisha when she was 9 years old. Okay? However, even though he didn't have sex with Aisha when she was 9 years old, everybody says that's okay to do.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, he went through a laundry list. I mean, there was like, he's citing everybody and their brother that said, oh, it's okay to do it. It's okay. But Muhammad didn't do it. Yeah.
Yeah, but for some reason, I don't know, that's the thing that was baffling to me. It's like, okay, if it's okay to do such a thing, then there's nothing wrong with it, including to Islamophobe back then, or whatever. Then why are you going against what Aisha said? First he said, actually, I don't have that clip, but he said in his book that although people are tended to believe, these people believe the words of Aisha, okay, that she had sex when she was nine, but they don't believe the more stronger narrative, which is not, it's not a stronger narrative. He says that actually everybody believes it's a weaker narrative. Weaker narrative that he actually made up at one point. That she was 15, okay, or at the age of 15, around there, okay, when he consummated the marriage. All right, but then in the backstage area with me, he actually says, nowhere did Aisha ever say that. And then when I went to one of the hadiths, and he had a whole list of hadiths ready for him.
No, I posted it in the chat. I posted in the chat, and he says, "Well, he sent me the link. Come up and let's have a discussion." And I'm thinking, dude, I know, I've seen how discussions go with you. You let him ask a question, or actually, what he does is he sits there and he ridicule you. Yeah, he ridicules you for 15 minutes. He insists and calls you all kinds of names. Right, and then he brings you up, and then you barely get enough time to get the question out. Then he puts you right backstage, and he spends the next 10 minutes ridiculing you some more. And then he gives you this long, bloviated answer, acting like he answered it, and then he shuts you off. Right, and then you're done. And I'm thinking, what the heck? Right, yeah, you go to Burger King in between all that. So I was like, no, that is anyway. Concerned is about is getting beholder guarded here by the imam.
No,
copyrighted. He's going to sit here and snivel about copy.
No,
all right. There we go. Sorry about that.
Can you see my screen?
Paul's screen. No, I cannot.
Okay. All right. So,
Let me, hold on. Let me, look at it.
You gotta kill mine.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Stop screen. There we go. All right. There we go, Paul. All right. I got yours.
Okay. So, this is what it says. This comes from, I put it in my book, E10.3. When a woman who has been made love to performs a perfunctory bath, and the male sperm afterwards leaves her vagina, then she must repeat the couple if two conditions exist. A, that she is not a child, but rather old enough to have sexual gratification. So pedophilia, by their prophet, has been legitimized here. So, I mean, who's the one who gave the law, and if it wasn't Muhammad, Sharia, I mean, he just saying that even, I mean, when you think about this, the child doesn't have to take a bath.
Okay, hold on. Where are you getting this, Paul? Paul, where did...
10.3 from Reliance of the Trim. This actually is a picture of my book.
10.3. 2.3. Boy, why? I'm gonna tell you what. What division is it? Division.
10.3.
Oh, E 10.3. Okay, E. You have an echo? There's an echo. Okay. Major ritual impurity, Janaba. Janaba. Sperm exists on the head. What the heck is this? This.
10.3.
Golly, hold on. All right, let me cross. All right, I'm crossing this out. I mean, God. It's a disgusting book, and it's a disgusting ideology.
This law in Sharia is the number one reason. I mean, when you think about it, they have legalized pedophilia. And this is why no Islamic country will outlaw child marriage. They have pretended. I discuss that in my book. But Philippines actually pretended. They said they basically outlawed marriages unless a girl is 15. But all they have to do is for the parents to arrange the marriage, and then it's legal. So
done.
The parents prove the marriage is legal.
And a lot of those little girls are crying when they're being taken away from their parents to be given to this lustful thug of a man, this pervert.
Look at Aisha's case. She was suddenly a,
yeah, her hair lost.
Found
yeah, she
her,
lost her,
her
hair.
Her husband, 50-some-odd years old. She was so stressed out, she lost all her hair.
Yeah.
Not only that, but there were a couple things with that. One, okay, horrible. So he died when she was 18 or 19 years old, okay? And he forbid in the Quran that anybody could marry them. Anybody could marry any of his ex-wives, widow wives. Think about that. Going through the rest of your life, 18, 19 years old, without physical affection, without physical attention, without physical love. I mean, that is just a horrible, horrible curse of a bitter man to do that to a woman. But listen, let's get back to this video because you're going to see something more shocking from the imam. Remember, he is defending, okay, this thing. And he is even, you got to watch it. Pull it up again.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Turn it up.
It is up. I did kind of up as loud as
turn the sound up.
I did. It's up. I got here. Here it is, right there. What do you want me to go? Hold on. Let me see if my computer sound is up too. Hold on. That's 100. So, all right. Here we go.
Verse 65, verse 4. And so I pick it back up and I say, some critics, quote unquote critics.
Yeah.
Have twisted and distorted the passage in order to deceive
the Arabs, believing
the Quran allows for child marriage. They claim the Arabic word nisa within the verse could also refer to.
I don't know what he's talking about with nisa. I've never used that one. We don't have to. But no, I'm just talking over
the Arabic English dictionary.
I get it.
Arabic English dictionaries. The Arabic word nisa always refers to mature adult women.
Then why do they talk about prepubescent? Why is it? Why is there? Why are they?
Just keep playing.
All right.
Children. Despite those facts, Islamophobes distort the works of by Muslims who have no formal education in Islam. It's a belief in Quran sanctions child marriage.
It does.
The following commentary by Sayyid Abu Maududi is a prime example, and I quote, here, and this is his words, here one should bear in mind the fact that according to the explanation given in the Quran, the questions of waiting period arises in respect of the women with whom marriage may have been consummated.
Okay, hold on just a second.
You gotta mute yourself, Eric. Okay.
There's no waiting period in case divorce is pronounced before the consummation of marriage, as mentioned in Surah Al-Azab, which is the 49th chapter of the Quran. Therefore, making mention of the waiting period for the girls who have not yet menstruated, this is very important.
Okay, if it's very important, we need to pay attention, right?
Therefore, making mention of the waiting period for the girls who have not yet menstruated clearly proves that it is not only permissible to give them away in marriage at this time, but it is also permissible for the husbands to consummate marriage with her. Okay.
What?
What? Yeah, he's reading this, right?
So Maldudi is saying that it's okay to do this with a prepubescent little girl. And Kenny has this in his book. Yeah?
Kenny has this in his book.
Okay. Okay, just checking, just making sure.
Yeah, good.
Well, therefore, meaning, so he has, since therefore, the mention of the waiting period of the girls who have not menstruated clearly proves that it is not only permissible to give away them in marriage at this age, but it is also permissible for the husband to consummate marriage with her.
Okay, so he's struggling with this. He doesn't even realize what he put in his book. Is that what you're saying?
Wait, no.
Okay. All right.
Let me explain this.
Okay, you explain it, Kenny.
critics assume because marriage is allowed with a girl who's not yet menstruated that means she's a child. In other words, the female is immature and is not yet grown up.
Okay, isn't that what that normally means, though? Yeah. Okay. Hold on.
This poses a question, since who didn't menstruation become the only factor or criteria for someone to be determined as sexually mature?
Biology? Okay, you're not sexually mature if you're prepubescent. I mean, that by definition. And why does that only become the only criteria? Well, you can throw 1,000 other criteria upon that. But in order to be classified as sexually mature, biologically, that is a definition. You have to menstruate. You have to have gone through puberty or be in the process of going through puberty. This is why. All right, let's have a little conversation here. Okay, hold on. Go ahead, George. I would say, I would agree with that. A girl could be, just because she has not menstruated, could be.
It's the physical start of the mark of puberty.
The physical start of the mark of puberty.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Right.
Means she's not mature yet. So in other words, a female, after she started menstruating, she can conceive, but it does not mean that the rest of her body is prepared.
This is true. That's absolutely true. As a matter of fact, it can damage and does often damage a lot of her internal organs if she is not completely physically developed to conceive. And this is the sickest thing about this idea of which this guy is preaching. It's sick. Go ahead.
Kenny actually says that if a woman can menstruate, starts menstruation, that means she can have a child. And I said, well, you'll hear it. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Connie, were you going to say something? No, she's not.
Paul wanted to say something.
Yeah, Paul, that's right. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, he's citing the duty, and the duty is the guy that you cut the alert from. So that's interesting.
Maduti said what again?
Maduti is the person that Syed Kutba, the author of Milestone. The one that the Al-Qaeda loves. They love Syed Kutba, but
it makes sense. Right. Yeah, because I thought it was Kutub.
Maduti's hardcore.
All right. Let's go back to, because I thought Syed Kutub was the author, but that makes sense, too. I think he got it from somebody else. Okay.
Regardless of the commentaries that mention being too young or of a young age, we must ask how that indicates.
Pause it right there. You hear what he said? regardless of the commentaries. So now he's now ignoring the commentaries. Now he's ignoring the tafsirs. Because one of the all the tafsirs, they actually say, when it says not yet menstruated, it means too young to have menstruated. So here Kenny is putting an interpretation into one. He's putting words in Maduti's mouth. In other words, Maduti is explaining the meaning of the Quran. And here we have Kenny Bulmer explaining Maduti, but he completely misses Maduti, what Maduti is
saying. Right.
And he has to do this. He has to ignore all the commentaries that Maduti himself relies on. That says not yet reached the age of menstruation, meaning not yet old enough to menstruate. You can read that in the Kefir. You can read that in the two jowls. You know what I mean? And you can read that in all the classes and scholars. This is what they mean. This is what they're saying. Okay? He's interpreting. The funny part about this, we don't have to play any more of that video, but the funny part about this is you guys caught it. He's struggling with it as he's reading. What am I reading? He has to read it twice. He's like, well, let me explain. Like,
right.
Yes. When he says that, I'm like, explain, please, explain, explain away. You know? And his explanation just fails. Let's go to another video because I'm going to demonstrate this. This is now remember, okay, he said in this video that okay, so no, there are reasons, okay, where a woman of any age, okay, once they start menstruation, or they're actually probably some girls that do, that'd be something seriously wrong, if they have never menstruated. I don't know, I'd have to look that up, but let's say that is the case. Let's say a woman grows into adulthood, 20 years old, has not menstruated, okay, does that mean that she's not able to have sexual intercourse? I would say no, but there's still something wrong with her. In other words, that is the exception and not the rule. Here Kenny is saying, well, the exception is now the rule, and that is not the case. And I would say that is a rare exception. You got the other video put up? This is short. We can play this. You can play it the whole way through.
Which one is this? Number two or what?
No. Let me get it for you.
Let me see here.
I don't know, because we went in order here. Here, I'll just send you a new link.
It says 35 seconds. Okay. All right, got it. Let me see here. Where was I? Babing. Okay, this is it.
Okay.
Okay, again, he's trying to justify. Can you guys hear me?
Keep playing.
Okay. That's just sick.
Okay, well, because you paused at the wrong time.
I'm sorry. I don't want him saying things about copyright. I don't want him to get into the copyright issues that I know is going to come in.
This is not a copyright issue. This is fair use.
It is, but if you're not copyright.
This is considered fair use because you're bringing a clip and you are commenting. David Wood won an argument that way, and several others have won, so they can't claim copyright.
Well, they can. They can claim.
They can do it, but they lose every time.
Right.
And if they can go to court any day they want to, and they can lose every single time. But that's the law.
Right. Anyway, well, since I already know your identity and where you live and everything, Eric, we have nothing to fear.
That's just legal action in the future. I'm alluding to. Go ahead.
Let me explain to you what he said, because actually that's coming in 1.5. I find it much more interesting in this part. Okay, just play 1.5 speed. But basically what he says. Okay, so here's what he says, he quotes Aisha, saying that girls can be married at 6, okay, and then menstruate at, you know, 3 or 4 years later and have sex, okay, all right? But he's like, well, Aisha didn't say that's her. Aisha didn't say that happened to her. I'm like, whatever, dude, I'm not talking about Aisha. But anyway, so he brings this up, and he says, it is a fact. It is a fact of nature, and a scientific fact, that 9-year-old girls can get pregnant and have babies. He actually says in later clip, which I have not cut out yet, that yes, this is a scientific fact that 9-year-old girls are mature enough to actually have babies, and it happens all the time, basically. Okay?
In Pakistan.
No, yeah. They die. They die rather quickly. How can a little 9-year-old girl carry a, you know, 6-7 pound bowling ball to term and pass it out, even if you do a C-section?
Well, this is what...
I'm sure it's possible now with real intense medical intervention, but yeah, they don't get that.
But this is one of the main arguments that Connie was making, and this is what's gotten her into all this trouble with this cacophony of fools down there, is that when she made the comment that Islam is murder, well, what she was doing is she's referring to these little girls, all these little girls that are being impregnated by these scumbags, these old men, because they want to get their rocks off on them. And then they're being made to carry these, well, being made, but they are carrying these babies that they have been impregnated with to term. And when in the process of all this, it's causing internal damage to them, internal damage that is leading to death in a lot of cases, but also in a lot of cases, it's leading to the permanent damage of internal organs where they're going to be incontinent for the rest of their lives, and among other things. I'm not going to, you know, get into the gruesome details of it, but by just, you know, this is what this does to a human being. This is why I'm saying, and this is what the title of the show is, this is sociopathic behavior. This is the type of behavior trying to justify what an old scumbag did 1,400 years ago. Remember, sociopath.
No, Eric, you don't understand. Muhammad never did this, but it was okay for everybody else to do this at the time. According to Kenny, there was nothing wrong with it. Except Muhammad just didn't do it. And anybody who says he did it wasn't there, except for the fact that Aisha was there, obviously at the consummation of her wedding. But he denies that, even though he says in the opening chapter of his book that it was a blessing and a mercy and wisdom from Allah that Muhammad married Aisha so she could carry on Sunnah because she was young and had a better memory than all the old hags he had married, okay, previously. And she actually authored, according to Kenny, over 2,000 hadiths, except he rejects the hadiths, where every one of them, where Aisha said she was actually 9 years old, okay? I mean, it just baffles the mind, okay? You know what I mean?
Well, there's no consistency there. There's one thing that they are consistent about is being inconsistent, so.
Exactly. Well, Eric, you're saying this is what Islam does. This is what I'm saying. No, in Kenny's case, he was actually already done, and this is what attracts him to Islam, is what I am saying. In other words, Islam makes, I like to say, Islam makes dumb people stupid, and stupid people dumb. Okay, if they stay in it. I'm sorry. You have, in order to remain in this thing, if you actually learn and listen to your, look at, he was reading it, and you saw him catch himself in real time. You saw him totally,
right,
completely shocked. Like, he had to reread it. He was like, this is his own words, but he copied and pasted it with somebody else, I'm sure. But he said,
Well, he was quoting Maldudi, in all fairness. He was quoting Maldudi, but I don't think he realized what he put in his book.
He doesn't own Maldudi. Maldudi is an extensive work, just like Mukhari. He actually says, I'm getting it from this source, some guy that wrote a book, you know, defending this practice or denying the practice, I should say. So he, you know what I mean? So I'm sure he didn't know. This guy, he's defending my position that Muhammad didn't do this, so I'm just going to copy and paste it. In there because, you know, and that's like the first time he read it. He was like, what? You know what I mean? Okay? But when he read it out even though he realized what he was saying, he still had to cover it up, and he still had to come, let me explain the explanation, because the explanation is very clear, so why does he need to explain?
Well, what he
says something by it. I mean, why is he citing the duty of anything? I'm kind of mind blown that this guy, his claim is false to begin with.
Exactly.
But of all people to cite,
exactly.
Usually when you hear the name of Maduti mentioned, you're talking about jihad.
Exactly.
Yeah, or you're talking about Saeed Qutb or something like that. But you're not. I'm just kind of. Maduti is well known.
Maduti is what ISIS relies on for a lot of their stuff as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Saeed Qutb and Maduti. It's those two. So is Kenny, and this is the thing I actually think is happening here. Kenny is appealing to the jihadi by using this as a source. So maybe I'm wrong, but why else would he, or is he saying I am one of them? I have some serious questions about using that as a source. I use Maduti to explain jihad to people. But when you're using, it says something about the direction he is already leaning and what kind of influence he wants to have, which is kind of something to think about.
Well, here's one. So, like I said, I've been perplexed on this for, like, the last couple of days. Just to let you know, I am Radical Ahab now, because Kenny is my white whale. I actually rewatched Moby Dick, and I'm like, But anyway, so he surfaced, and I'm like, there she blows, you know what I mean? I'm like, all on it. But I'm perplexed, because like I said, he denies that it happened, even though Aisha herself, who he says is a wisdom of Allah, that she was married so young because she could recount the sunnah because she had the better memory, right? Even though she herself says this, but then he denies that and rejects that, okay? But then he builds up this case where it was perfectly acceptable and okay to do that in that day and age. But just Muhammad couldn't do it. So it was perfectly acceptable, perfectly okay. Then why does he have a problem with Muhammad doing it, the perfect man? If the perfect man was just doing what was common every day, it was it's no big deal. Do you see what I'm saying? So I honestly think he sees a problem in it. I don't know if you know this, Paul, but Connie, he actually was responding to Connie. This is about a couple months ago now. Okay? Where he responds to Connie, and we got that video, we got those clips. Where he actually says, Muslims are not coming over to take over 9-year-old girls. Connie, I don't know if you understand this, but men are attracted to women. And a 9-year-old girl is not a woman. Okay? Now, I'm sure there are men, he actually says this, who are attracted to 10-year-old girls, but they're perverts. But they're perverts. Or they're impotent. They have sexual dysfunction. I'm 50 years old, buddy, and I'm not attracted to a 9-year-old girl. Play the video.
Hold on. For some reason, I'm not getting.
You didn't turn on. You didn't pick the sound thing.
All right. Let me. Okay. Hold on just a second here. Okay. Let's do it again. Screen share. Share. Bada bing. Save system audio. Share. Mute me.
That Muslim men they've got their eyes open for little 9-year-old girls that you seem to be so convinced about. And we're looking where are all the little 9-year-old girls? I don't know about you, Connie, but let's be honest with you. I'm a 50-year-old man, and I've seen women that are far more attractive than 9-year-old girls, and far more developed.
Far more developed.
Right. Okay. We're following this.
Hold on. Did you notice something? He missed something where he said,
women were far more attractive, than 9-year-old girls. So in to some extent, that 9-year-old girls are attractive.
Well, that's what I'm worried.
Conversations with people, Issa, that have made their rescuing device for that argument is that, well, Aisha was more developed and wiser beyond her age at that time, so she was therefore ready to be married. That, and I'm just telling, you know, there's absolutely no truth to that. There's no evidence for that, but that is their their response to that. That's their apologetic. Seen that.
that's the point. So if the average person can't handle it, what does it say about the followers of Islam that they have to either justify or create some mind-numbing arc of logic that explains that, no, this can't possibly be true? It's a horribly sick faith structure that justifies not just misuse or maltreatment, it justifies, I like Connie's description, murder in many ways, of women. Women in Islam are the only ones, it is the only faith structure where a woman births her guardian. It is the only faith structure. The minute that child is born, that child has authority over her.
I think I found it, Paul.
As long as it's a male.
Yeah, I think I found it. Let me see.
Yes, that's one of them, yeah.
Okay, so...
What's up, guys? I'm Kobe Person. I recently saw a video online of how child marriage is legal in more than 90 countries in the world. Children as young as 6 years old are forced to marry old men and have their childhood stripped away from them. But what if it was legal in the United States for children to get married? Well, but it is. In some states, it could be as low as 12 years old. So we wanted to do a social experiment to see how the public would react to an older man marrying a younger child. Let's see what happens.
No, this is not what I had seen before.
Yeah, sit down right here. There you go.
Is this it?
There you go. Sorry.
Is this it?
There you go.
Yes, it is.
Paul, is that it? Is this the one you were talking about?
Absolutely.
Okay. Look at this. Oh my gosh. And the sad part is that's my granddaughter's age. Look at the face on the girl. Not that one. Okay. That gets to the point. Am I correct on that? I mean, this is the normal. This would be a normal react. And she's 12. This is 3 years older than what little Aisha was. This would be a normal reaction of what you would expect from anybody with a moral compass. And you can clearly see that this guy right here, it offends him, and it should. You can see that, you know, this guy has a sense of decency, a sense of right and wrong. And to say, and he asks him, well, how old are you? I tell you what, that to think that this goes on, it still goes on today across the globe because of sociopathic behaviors as demonstrated and set forth in the Sunnah of Muhammad is really a shame, and it's really sad. Okay, can we bury this dead horse, or does anybody have anything else that they want to say about this? Okay. I'm going to assume that's permission to move on. Okay, so one other thing, let me see here. Yeah, that's okay. Go ahead, buddy. Don't eat all of it. All right.
Hey, you still have
okay.
None of
you'll be able to resist my argument.
I'll answer that. It says a mushwalk, okay? So mushwalk is used as a toothpick, right? After it's whittled down, processed, chopped up in little pieces. An actual mushwalk rack is what we used to call back in the day when we was old. Eric knows this because he's older than I am. Although he's physically much more fit and, you know, doesn't break out in sweat when he's firing a shotgun like I do. But, doesn't blow a hole in the wall either.
Don't do that. Don't say it.
Anyway, but no, they're talking about cutting a switch, okay? All right, cutting a tree branch off and like a weeping willow, you know? Those, you know, for discipline. I mean, they leave welts, they leave marks, okay? It is not just taking a little poking them with toothpicks. Hey, do you know what a convict can do with a mishwalk? I'm telling you right now, man, they'll take your eye out. No, seriously, when it says a mishwalk, it's not talking about the finished product. It's actually talking about the whole branch, okay? And there are plenty of online commentaries, online videos of YouTube, where these sheikhs in Arabic countries are actually talking about how to properly use the mishwalk on your wife, okay? So I just wanted to conclude on this whole thing with Aisha and Kenny and everything like this. Kenny, if you're listening, and we know you are listening, I feel that you are conflicted. Because on the one hand, as you said, a man is attractive, but a 9-year-old girl is a pervert. Because they're far more attractive, women are far more attractive, and definitely far more mature, even if the 9-year-old has had a period. Now, yes, seriously, if the whole definition of being sexually mature enough to have sex is to have a period, there are cases, and you can look this up, okay? It's right on puberty, I think it's called. There's a fancier name for it. But they have drugs to prevent this, okay? Drugs to prevent this. They're called puberty blockers. So they give the transsexual kids, okay, which is another story, which I'm against. But no, these are heavy hardcore drugs because there are some women and even, well, young girls and boys who think, okay, for these look like you're 12, 13. That's another story. Okay, but no, seriously, Kenny, you're citing the exception, okay, to appeal to the rule, and that is a logical fallacy, the common logical fallacy that's being practiced today in wokeism, okay? One last point on this, Kenny, okay, because I know you are listening. All right, here's the thing. Why can't you admit, why can't you acknowledge, if it was okay, according to you, according to your book, the chapter in your book, that you say defends Muhammad against the accusation that he had sex with Aisha when she was 9 years old, but yet you spent a great deal of this book defending the practice of having sex with 9-year-old girls, okay? Then why do you have a problem if Muhammad did have sex with Aisha at 9 years old, as Aisha herself said in multiple hadiths, multiple narrations, multiple tafsirs say it, multiple commentaries say it.
Well, this is where he was lying. This is exactly where he was lying. He was trying to say, well, there was no eyewitnesses to this. Nobody saw this happen. So how do you know that it was even consummated? Islamophobe. And then you sit there and you show him in black and white what their own sources say, their own Sahih sources. And he even cited Tabari as saying that.
Okay. Is still underreported in Islamic countries because of the amount of witnesses you must have. So he's bringing up another topic of the sexual misconduct of how is men who follow the faith structure of Islam treat women.
Oh yeah, that's another thing, Paul. So evidently this isn't backstory on him. We don't want to discuss much on that. But yeah, if you know, if you've been following our struggle with Kenny and my great white whale. So he actually, his wife stepped on him. He actually accused her of committing adultery, all kinds of horrible things. That's why he beat, well, no, he didn't beat her. He just punched her in the forehead. That's why she tried to murder him, set him up to be murdered, according to him. Although nobody told him, even though she told her to tell her family, I'm going to shoot him. And then you mentioned this to him. All kinds of stuff. But that's why he spent 360-something, or 330-something days in jail, not prison, jail. Okay, I'm going to make that clear. For punching his wife in the head and other things because she was stepping out on him. Oh, yeah, he also slashed the tires of her lover, but he didn't take pot shots at him with a gun, even though the police report says that he did, but that's beside the point. Anyway, he accuses her of committing adultery and stepping out on him. But does he have four witnesses? And if he doesn't have four witnesses, Kenny, remember, you practiced the Sharia. You practiced the Sharia law as a Muslim. Doesn't your ex-wife owe you, don't you owe your ex-wife on the Day of Judgment for defaming, for slandering an honest woman, the mother of your child? For saying that she committed adultery, even though you don't have four witnesses that actually saw the penetration. And actually, according to Islamic law, Kenny, what's the punishment for someone who falsely accuses an honest woman of committing adultery? Oh, that's right. They get flogged. I think they get 100 lashes. So, Kenny, are you willing to allow me to administer the 100 lashes, the punishment, okay, publicly? For you defaming and slandering an honest woman, a good woman, your ex-wife? I'm just saying, Kenny. Anyway, that's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right, we're going to move to the next topic, which is, again, sociopathic behavior, and that is having people killed for insulting you. Now, for those of you who do not know, there is a list. Let me pull up the list first. There's a list on Wiki Islam, I'm going to put it up here, of the murders. Let me make this smaller here so we can see the murders that Muhammad committed. I'm sorry, ordered. I'm not sharing my screen. I need to share my screen. The murders that Muhammad ordered people to commit, or at least for a second, or at least sanctioned them, approved them. And I believe it's 32, maybe more than that. It's more than that. 44. 44 separate ones are listed here, and they list not only the murder, the reason for it, the circumstances around it, but they also provide the sources for each one of these. And this is the one that I was going to point to today, because David Wood had made a video about it yesterday, and I think he alluded to it again today. Not Woodswood, where we look at, let's see here. Here is the hadith that discusses that a blind man had a freed concubine. So she's no longer a slave, but she was a concubine who used to insult. Notice she insulted Muhammad and say bad things about him. He told her not to do it. She did not stop. He rebuked her, and she did not obey him or heed him. One night when she started to say bad things about Muhammad, the prophet, he took a short sword or dagger, put it in her belly, pressed it, and killed her. So he kills her for disparaging the Muhammad, say bad things about Muhammad. And notice, a child fell between her legs and became covered by her blood. That is absolutely disgusting. The following morning was mentioned to Muhammad. He called the people together and said, I ask who the man has done this action, and I order him by my right over him that he should stand up. So the blind man stands up and says, O messenger of Allah, I am the one who did it. She used to insult you, say bad things about you. I forbade her, but she did not stop. I rebuked her, and she did not give up her habit. I have two sons like pearls from her, and she was kind to me. Last night she began to insult you and say bad things about you. So I took a dagger, put it in her belly, pressed it till I killed her. Now watch what Muhammad's reaction is. This is Sunnah. This is the pattern of conduct for Muslims to follow for all times. Why? Because Muhammad is supposedly a perfect man. So what he says, thereupon Muhammad, the prophet, said, bear witness, there is no blood money due for her. And this is a Sahih Hadith in Sunan Abu Dawud 43:61. Now, here's the worst part about it. We always talk about, well, what is the Sharia? Well, it's the law that is derived from the Quran, the Hadith, and the Sirah of Muhammad, Takrit. So we go down here and see what the reliance of the traveler, the Sharia, says. And it says, to revile Allah or his messenger, on page 95, is an act of apostasy. So what is the punishment for an act of apostasy? It's right here. When a person who has reached puberty and is saying apostatized from Islam, he deserves to be killed. To revile Allah or his messenger deserves to be killed. I bear witness there's no blood money for her. So I hope I drew a picture clear enough for even a moron to follow of where that comes from. It comes straight from the Sunnah. The Sunnah of Muhammad is sociopathic. How do we know it's sociopathic? Well, let's go up here and look at what the definition of sociopathic is. Once again, I say a sociopath is manipulation, aggression. Well, when you stick a knife in somebody's stomach, I would say that is aggressive behavior. And I would also say that this has a lack of empathy for others. So if you're sticking a knife in somebody's stomach for daring to criticize a man who's been dead for 1,400 years, you're a sociopath. Any comment from the gallery? Yes, Dominic. Muhammad was indeed evil.
I would say not a sociopath. I would say a psychopath.
Well, that's, and this is exactly what we find. These people, and this is what David Wood was talking about in his video yesterday, was that this happened in Pakistan, where somebody went out and murdered a guy, burned him to death. I think they burned him to death or something. I can't remember what exactly happened to him. But they killed this guy, and the thing that they accused him of was blasphemy. You're blaspheming Muhammad. Not blaspheming Allah, Muhammad. So to blaspheme Muhammad demands the death penalty. If I went through the first one of the list of murders that Muhammad either ordered or approved, you could start with the first one, Asma bint Marwan, for opposing Muhammad with poetry and for provoking others to attack him. I don't know if provoking attack, there's other, but if you're opposing Muhammad with poetry, you are again insulting him. This next one, Abu Ba'ask, killed a Jewish poet for opposing Muhammad through poetry, instigating people against Muhammad. After the Battle of Badr, let's see here. Here we are. According to Ibn Ishaq, Muhammad ordered his followers to kill Ka'b because he had gone to Mecca after Badr and invade against him and composed verses which he bewailed the victims of the Quraysh who had been killed at Badr. So you can go through this list here. I'll go ahead and post the link to that in the chat. It's just absolutely disgusting. Yes.
Don't you know that Muhammad conquered the entire city of Mecca with all these evil pagans without killing anyone? Didn't you hear that? Didn't you know that? That's how merciful he was? Only one small problem with that. Well, actually, two small problems. Big problems, really. First of all, the Meccans didn't put up a fight. Okay? So, yeah, you can, you would know this more than I do, Eric. When you're besieging a town, okay, or you come up to a town with your military army, with and they're putting up a fight, keeping you away for a couple of days, or weeks, or months, and you finally break through, you're pretty much going to be pissed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to kill everybody. I mean, well, not everybody, but you're going to really be pissed and kill like a lot of people because of all the crap that they just put you through to take the town. Okay, no, this is how medieval warfare or pre-medieval warfare was done. Okay, even up in the medieval period, even up to the modern period. Okay, all right. Too much bloodshed has been shed, too much aggravation. The troops have to be let loose for a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm just saying.
Well, they did it during the Crusades, and I think Edessa. I mean, they laid siege to Edessa, and they went in there, and they're just nothing but. And well, Jerusalem, and the Crusaders laid siege to Jerusalem. By the time they got in Jerusalem, they decided, well, let's kill everybody, and they did.
Even before all that, I mean, Rome. Okay, when Rome came and knocking at your city state, okay, and they said, "Let us in," and you said, "No," to the big bad wolf, and they blew your house down. Forget about it. Depending, they would enslave your entire people. Right. They would relocate you, you know what I mean? They would raise the city to the ground, okay? I mean, this is the way it was done. But if you surrendered, you said, hey, we're going to accept the city, it's open, you can come on in, it's no big deal. Nazi Germany, let's take Nazi Germany, for instance. When they came up to Paris, everybody left Paris, right? They said, no, we're going to leave Paris open. Did Adolf Hitler destroy Paris? He could have, very easily. He didn't. No, it was left open. But other cities that put up a resistance, they raised it to the ground, okay? Or pretty much close to it. But anyway, my point being is this, really quickly, with what Muhammad did in Mecca, okay? There were three people he wanted killed, okay? And he said, even if they're hiding behind the curtain of the Kaaba, you're going to bring them out and kill them. He brought these people out, and they said, you want me to kill them? And Muhammad didn't say anything. So they let him go. And Muhammad was furious. And Abu Bakr said, what? I think it was Abu Bakr. Said, we were waiting for a sign from you. And what was Muhammad's response? A prophet does not kill with a sign. In other words, he ordered them to do a thing, and they didn't do it, and he was furious with them, but because they were still powerful enough, he could not act against them. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Okay? So it was all political. Muhammad was a political genius, just like Adolf Hitler was a political genius. That doesn't mean he's a prophet. That doesn't mean he's someone to emulate. But he was not a dummy. He was a serious political animal, and he understood the politics of his time. He understood, as Negan says from The Walking Dead, it's not that you kill a person. You got to kill the right person in the right way and at the right time.
Yeah, well, can I say
and that's what Muhammad did. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think he was really a
cult
leader. And what I think we need to recognize about
he
was a cult, you know, and one of the interesting things is that I want to show people a contrast between Islam and Christianity. In Christianity, the believer is encouraged to study, show themselves approved. This is what is written in the Bible. Says. The believer, especially in Protestant churches, you walk to church with your own Bible. In Islam, it's not like that. You need the imams or some scholar to interpret for you what it is really saying. Do you notice that? You have to rely on these other people. It's because it's so bad. If you read the Sugar and you read them about the life of Muhammad, it's really, really awful. Anyone reading it for themselves would be turned off from Muhammad. Ayan Urshali, she said she left Islam after reading the Quran herself. That's when she left it. It was so repulsive to her. So this is why they have to put a filter between
Muslims and the teaching. Well, I watched a debate yesterday as far between Robert Spencer and, I don't know, some other guy. He had a PhD. He's a wizard of smart. And the debate was which one is more violent, Christianity or Islam. And these debating opponent for Robert Spencer would continuously cite actions by the United States, Western countries, against Islamic civilizations. I mean, he was just listing one right after another after another. But the fact was is that did he miss? Is he, like most people, he's going to change the subject. He's going to change the subject from is Christianity violent or is it the United States or Western civilization or whatever. I can't remember how it was described. And then Robert just went in his conclusion, just went boom, boom, boom down the list and showed how all of these actions are actually codified in the Quran, codified in the Sunnah by Muhammad, and clearly demonstrated that this religion tends to, not always, but tends to at times make people very violent and act out violently against people that would be perceived as insulting. Robert, stop that.
I'm sorry.
Sounds like you drink a Pepsi. Sounds like you're drinking a Pepsi. My son did that one morning during church. Okay, all right, sorry. But he did that during service one morning. And this is a small church we were going to, and he pops a Pepsi and takes a drink of it, and blah. It was funny. Okay, anyway. Okay, so we're going to close this up for the day. I just want to close it out by showing one little thing here. And when we talk about exposing people for violence and mocking it, this is what happened last year. If you all remember when Hatun got slapped by that guy at Speaker's Corner, she was mocked for it. And this is what people do when they have – where is that? When they do not have empathy – let me go back up. Lack of empathy, that was part of the definition, lack of empathy for others. And this is what it turns you into. This is what the Sunnah of Muhammad does. It turns you into somebody – that lacks empathy, makes you aggressive, manipulative. I don't know how I could better demonstrate it than what we did today with our discussion and our with the examples that I brought. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. I got Sunday school practice that I take my grandkids to tonight. Okay, what is this? This is Yaha. You came here to debate. Well, you got to come on time, mister. Too bad. All right, guys, God bless you. We will see you next week on the Cross and the Crescent, or actually Tuesday. Don't be late Tuesday, 5 o'clock, Cross and the Crescent discussion group. God bless. Okay, let me jump over here to Blog Talk Radio and stop it over there, and then...
Good show, guys.
All right, yeah, thanks, Paul. Appreciate you bringing that Saika duff up. I'd forgotten about that.
I cannot believe he was citing the duty. I mean, what is he? That's a blatant statement that he is openly affiliating with pro jihadi.
He doesn't know. No,
he does know. You wouldn't normally look for the duty.
This is what you don't understand. He actually, after he quotes all these sources, he does not get them. These are not, he's not reading the